Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbor Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. There's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a natural redhead, and I love films. As Henry James once said, three things in human life are important. The first is to be kind. The second is to be kind. And the third is to be kind. And the fourth is, wherever possible, to use practical effects. Hot take, Mr. James. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Jameela Jamil, Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, Mark Frost, and even Bled Dambles. But this week, it's the brilliant, brilliant, brilliant actor, Mr. James Lance. You can watch all of Ted Lasso seasons 1 to 3 complete now on Apple TV Plus. You can also watch all of season 1 of Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. We hope you enjoyed the big finale. Oh boy. Watch it, love it. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get an extra 20 minutes of lovely chat with James. He tells me a secret. We talk about beginnings and endings. You also get the whole episode uncut, ad-free, and as a video. Check it out at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, James Lance. James Lance plays the great Trent Crim on Ted Lasso. He is a wonderful man. He's in every important comedy in Britain in the last 20 more years. Everything you love, basically, James Lance is in it. He's an amazing actor, amazing man. I had the absolute pleasure of working with him on Ted Lasso, and I had the joy of recording this podcast over Zoom with him. It's a really lovely time, and I think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 250 of Films to be Buried With.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a stage actor, a screen actor, a movie actor, a person who is in every single greatest British comedy of the last generation. If you think of a comedy and you think, oh, that's one of the best TV shows ever, don't worry, he's in it. He's an Emmy nominee. He's a lover. He's a spiritual man. He's a beautiful soul and a wonderful actor and a fucking great head of hair and a handsome fellow and a beauty. But let's not be shallow. He's also a brain and a personality. And here he is. I can't believe he's here with all that talent. Please welcome to the show. It's Mr. James Lance!
Wow. Hello, thank you very much. You sound exactly like my inner voice. I was saying all those things earlier. Hello, mate.
Hello, Jimmy. How are you? Nice to see you.
Oh, hello, lovely man. It's nice to see you too. Yeah, I'm all right. You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. I've got so many things to say to you. Some of them, I don't know if I've said to you publicly, so let's say them. One is, if people are watching season 3 of Ted Lasso, they'll be aware how fucking great Jimmy Lance is in it. And how, I remember we talked about it, and I think even we made a joke at some point. Because of the storyline in season 3, you are in a lot of scenes where you don't have a line. You're just there, observing. Mm-hmm. And it is a testament to you as an actor and as a man that you are fully present in every scene and really matter in every scene. And it's not, at no point does it feel like, yeah, Jimmy's just there in the background. Like, as in, you are absolutely a character involved in the scene, engaged with the scene. And the fact that you never were like, oh, fuck, I've got to come in and just not say anything again. I was like, especially when you're an Emmy nominee and a superstar and one of the all-time greats, I was like, what a man. What an actor. What a man. Great man. And it really pays off. You're fantastic in this season. And I think it surprises people if you actually go, you know, I didn't have any lines in that scene, because I don't think you'd think about it because you're so part of it. Mm. You know what I mean? Anyway, it's excellent work.
Oh, thanks, man. I think the my secret there is that I actually quite like not having any words.
Tell me more.
I do. I like it. I like just listening and seeing what happens, you know, in the moment. With that, there's not that much pressure. You just get to sort of emphasize and you know, just kind of underline certain moments in it, which I really enjoy. I love that.
Tell the listeners that, because you told me something once, if you don't mind sharing it, that I think is kind of extraordinary, is you only read the pilot and you, in the same way, that sounds similar, in the way that I talk about, you know, feeling like I was Roy and it was like a calling. It was very, sort of felt very strong. You felt the same way about Trent Crim, I believe. And in the pilot, it ain't a big part, you know.
Yeah.
It's a significant part, but it's not big. And you had only read the pilot and you felt this very special. Can you tell us about that, please?
I can, with pleasure. Yeah, I woke up one night and it was in the middle of the night and there was an email from my manager and it said, this script came in, it said Ted Lasso. And I knew straight away, I thought that there was an energy to it. I was quite excited to read it. And he said, I think there could be a role in this for you, maybe the role of Higgins. And I read it. Do you know that? And I read it and I thought, I'm not going to get Higgins. But I saw this name, Trent Crim, double M. And I thought, who is Trent Crim? I just wanted to know. And I read that little scene and I wrote back to my manager and said, hey, I won't get Higgins, but let them know I'd love to play Trent Crim. I'm sure it's just going to be a day play, but I'd love to do it. And he was like, okay, sure. Anyway, long story short, 6 months later, the audition comes in and I was actually going to go and do a play, and which I was quite excited to do. And I was talking to my agent about it, and I said, I'd like to do this drink. And she said, yeah, it should be work, you know, you should do it. And I was like, I think it's only one episode. But she's like, well, you know, who knows? Anyway, I went, I auditioned, I got offered the role, and then it's turned into, you know, what it is now, which is just an amazing ride, as you know.
Yeah. And did you, out of curiosity, I mean, you're absolutely perfect for Trent Crim and stuff. Why were you like, I'm not Higgins, or I wouldn't get Higgins. What was it?
It was, you just get a feeling, don't you? You just kind of know. You just sort of have a, you just, I guess it's a connection or something. There was something, I found something funny about the name Trent Crim. It just made me laugh. Obviously it sounded quite Dickensian, but I like the idea of this man announcing himself, you know, and then following up with The Independent. It just made me chuckle. And that was enough for me, really.
If I may out you in this way, you're a very spiritual man, and you are often on set with a book, and it's often a book about spirituality, and you carry around blessed water. And I wonder if you have always been this way. Is this something you've been exploring recently? The fact that you feel energy and a script and all these things, I think, are right. But is this something you've developed over time, or were you always this way?
Gosh, I mean, I think we're all spiritual beings, and I guess the older I've become, the more I'm aware of how I feel about things. And so now I kind of trust that much more than I used to. I used to sort of really not know how I feel about things, but I do trust my intuition. So I guess that's kind of my general compass, is just, how do I feel about something? And that's how I roll.
And how often are you like muddy about like, I think maybe this, or is it always very clear?
No, it's not always very clear. But what I do know is that the right answer for me will drop in often at the very last second. So I try to just sit back and hope that will happen. And it tends to. I mean, something's going to happen, isn't it? You know,
something
always going to happen. I remember this really lovely little story about the Beatles when they were on tour and they were driving, and apparently all four of them were in the car, and they crashed into a ditch, and they were right stuck in this ditch, and they didn't quite know what to do. Nobody moved. And then one of them just went, something will happen. And I think I've adopted that as my mantra.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one more thing? You told me something once, nearly made me cry, about a decision you'd made in your life about your career and stuff and what you wanted, and then Ted Lasso happened. Can you tell that story, or is that private?
Yeah, of course. Well, so, you know, I've been an actor since I was 10 years old. So I've been an actor for 39 years now, which is a long time. And I've had many periods of being out of work. And at one point I thought to myself, I've got to go to Hollywood and see if I can make it. So I put everything I had into the pot, went to Hollywood, lived just above Hollywood, actually, lived there for 4 months, and I didn't land anything. I got absolutely nothing. It was the loneliest time of my life. My wife used to fly in and out sometimes and see me and feel sorry for me and then leave again. And in fact, the only thing that really happened to me out there was lots of people said they love my hair. And
it's great.
Thanks, man. And then what happened was, I found myself, I was just always in bookshops and like going to like museums and eating in Musso and Frank's and like really old places. And I suddenly realized that I'd been chasing this childhood dream to go and live in Hollywood. And it wasn't relevant to me anymore. And I wasn't networking. I wasn't going to any parties. I've never been like that here. So I don't know why I thought I'd be like that there at the age of four. I think it was 42 or something. It wasn't that long ago. Anyway, I got a play and I was glad for that. And it was back in London at the Bush Theatre. And I came back and I did this play. And I thought, I quite like old stuff. And I like the theatre. And I just want to make great work, of which I was hoping to land in America. I mean, I just wanted to do great work out there as well, but it didn't happen. And then something wonderful was happening when I was doing this play, and I've kind of got into the groove. I let everything go. I let my visa go. Everything, all the ideas of going to Hollywood. I just thought, I'm just going to do some good work, at, you know, in whatever capacity here. And then I remember one night thinking to myself, this is when I was rehearsing that play, thinking to myself, something has also got to drastically change in my life. I need a big shift. And then a couple of weeks later, my wife said, well, I watched her find out the result of her pregnancy test. And she was like, and I was like, and that was the big shift. Wow. And we became parents. And then this angel arrived and just not just rearranged the furniture, just rearranged my whole makeup, really. And and at that time, I'd finished the play then when he'd arrived, and I was out of work and again. And it's the theme of my career. And I was giving myself a bit of a hard time about being out of work. My wife was working loads. But then I realized I did this thing where I found out what my top values were in life. And I found out that my top value was to be a present father, a present loving father. And actually, I was 100% being that, because Katie was working away a lot. So I would go with them and be, you know, Mr. Mum thing with all the bits and the bobs and, you know, the bottles and bits. And it was just the most kind of important piece of my life. And then the other two things, values I had, were personal transformation, which was occurring at that time. And then the third piece was inspirational comedy, because I love comedy. I always have done. And around that time, I got Trent Crim. And lo and behold, that inspirational comedy is, you know, I was on that ride. So yeah, it all sort of came together.
Love it. I love it. And the thing is, I forgot to tell you something, and I just remembered it as you're telling that beautiful story, and it seems a shame, but I also feel like you did it, you know, because, and it's lucky you did, because the thing I forgot to tell you is, I can't tell you, you've died, you're dead. Dead.
Right. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah, again, yeah. How did you die this time?
Well, as you know, I've had many lives, Brett, so...
Yeah, fuck it, I could tell.
Died many times.
For every lock of hair.
Yeah.
That's a life.
None of them have ended well. So, is it, honestly, so is this... do I know I've died? Do I know I'm about to die?
You do now, I've just told
yeah,
you.
Yeah, okay, great. All right, well, if I have a choice at how it's going to happen...
I'm gonna choose it.
All right, I'm gonna wake up on this day. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna make love with my wife. That's gonna happen.
Hello. Cheeky.
Three minutes later, it's breakfast. I'm gonna go for
fully cooked.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna go for like something like cacio e pepe for my final breakfast. So I'm gonna go. I like a bit of hot cheese, and that's not a normal thing. But this is the final day, and then And then I'm gonna put a group text out to all my mates and say, do yourselves a favor, go down the betting shop and put everything on me dying tonight.
Right. Then delete this text.
And then delete this text, yes.
Yeah.
And then my wife's gonna drive us. I don't know why I feel like being driven today. I normally like to drive. She's gonna drive us to Glastonbury. Okay. The festival's gonna be on. We're gonna get right down the front. And I'm going to watch all these incredible bands, and all my mates are going to be there. And we're going to, because Sly and the Family Stone is going to be on, you know, Fred again, Midlake. I'm going to go, the mighty Nick Cave is going to headline.
Wow.
And then we're all going to go up to the Stone Circle. I'm going to say to everyone, hey, if I died tonight, I'd be a happy man. And then I'm going to nip up the hill, have a cup of tea and a flapjack, and then I'm just going to nod off.
Even your death makes me cry. I assume... Given, you know, I'm a practical man here. It's a wonderful day you've had. And then you say you nod off. So I'm assuming you've overdosed on heroin.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mention the smack intake. No.
Okay. I mean, it's a wonderful way to go.
Yeah, I think so.
A wonderful way to go.
I think so.
OD'd on heroin at the top of fucking Stonehenge or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Mid-flapjack.
It's not bad. Carbs and heroin did you in the end. lovely day. Fair enough. Do you worry about death? Jimmy Lance.
The only time I'm most worried about it is this week, thinking I have to think about it for this podcast, to be honest. Mm. Because since becoming... thanks for that. I think I'd be a lot more humorous about it if I didn't have a little boy. It was that element of it. I didn't tell you this bit, but I'd already made a video telling him everything I think he might need to know in life, and I've left the side. But I thought I had to take it a bit seriously. Something about not seeing him again really it did me in a bit. So I don't really want to die. Because I'm okay. Not for a while.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not for a bit.
Okay. How old do you want to be? You get to choose here, so...
Oh, well...
I mean, bear in mind, Sly and the Family Stone still have to be alive.
I know.
To work out.
But they could be those holograms, like ABBA, couldn't they? We could maybe do that.
Sly and Family Stone, yeah.
A gram.
Oh, nice. It'll be fine, yeah.
I don't know. Am I in my 90s? Maybe in my 90s. Maybe I'm 100.
100?
Yeah, I'll go 100.
Do you think you get a card from the king when you turn 100?
He'll be dead by then, won't he? Oh, I guess it'll be William.
Wow. I didn't know you were going to kill the king. Well, that's a record. Wow, okay. quite a twist.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mention that, but it was a big day.
Oh, he'll be dead by then. Okay. What do you think happens when you die?
Well, there is a theory that that's when we wake up, and I quite like that idea. I genuinely do think I've been here many times, and I think the next bit's going to be great. I think it's going to be quite good.
Is the bit where you wake up, you're in... the place where all consciousness comes from and you remember all your past lives and you're...
Yeah, I reckon.
Having fun and you're like a floaty spirit.
Definitely.
Having fun.
Absolutely. I think that's when it all comes together. So I think the soul that I am will be fully, fully operational at that point, and it will all come together quite nicely.
Do you think... I've been thinking... I'm sure I've vaguely discussed this on this podcast before, so forgive me. But I think I 100% believe in reincarnation and many lives and stuff. The thing I find interesting is it's quite inefficient because you have a life, you learn these skills, you build ideas, morals, ethics, whatever. Then you die, then you come back with no memory of the previous life. So it's quite an inefficient way of growing and building, is that every time you have to start again, you don't seem to necessarily fully bring back the things you did. But then my new theory is it's like the human body is kind of, the technology isn't advanced enough to hold the information that is put into it when it's born. So you do take across all the things from your past lives, but the brain, human body is like, it's like an old operating system and it can't quite process all this stuff. And that's why people have therapy and... you know, life to kind of, here's the things that were in you that we gave you at the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I reckon. I think that sounds about right. There is a little bit of a blip there. But I think on some level, there's a sort of within our vibration, that is where that it's a different type of memory that we keep. It's not the one in here, but there's a sort of there's an energetic memory that I think we carry. That's what I reckon.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. Well, good news. You've woken up and it's heaven.
Rocking.
And they love you there. It's filled with your favourite thing. What's your favourite thing?
My favourite thing is, I don't know why I think this, but I'd love it if Prince was there and he was dressed all in purple and he was like, you know, a bit like just really pleased to see me. And he says, hey man, come with me. And just sort of opens up this purple... I can imagine they're double doors. And then we go into this room, but I don't know what happens after that.
Oh, mate, let me tell you, that happens. He goes, hey, mate, come with me. He's dressed in purple. He opens up the double doors and inside is 10 million mini princes.
Nice.
All in purple. And they've all got guitars and they're playing Purple Rain and any song you like as you move amongst them. And they're like, hey, man. All of them say, hey, man, as you walk through them. Mm. They're absolutely delighted to see you. And their music's playing all the time, but they stop the music briefly just to say, hey, we're fans. Can we talk about your life through film? And you're like, yeah.
Yes, Prince.
Okay. Let's do it. Yes, Prince.
Yes, Prince.
Yes, my Prince. Yes, Princes. And the first thing Princes ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Jimmy Lance?
Well, Princes.
The Independent.
The first film that I remember seeing is Amadeus.
What an opening gambit. It's one of the all-time greats. That was your first film.
That is my first film I remember seeing.
Explain yourself.
Well,
how?
My mum took me to the cinema. I was a little bit too young. I think it was a PG, but I was around 10 or 11. And she slightly snuck me into the cinema in Yeovil, of all places. And I didn't know what we were going to see. And it started and my whole world changed completely. Just from the opening frame, I was 1,000,000% absorbed in this film. And I kind of related completely to, not the genius, may I point out, of Mozart, but the kid-like, giddy nature of that performance by Tom Hulce. He's just like a big, reckless kid. He was kind of everything that I wanted to be. And then there was, of course, Salieri with, you know, that outrageously cunning performance by F. Murray Abraham. And I didn't know which one I wanted to be more. I just thought, I just want to be able to do what F. Murray Abraham's doing. But look at Tom Hulce just, you know, running around and laughing and just being outrageous. And then just the whole plot, the sumptuousness of the production, the music. It blew my tiny mind. And I knew before that I wanted to be an actor, but that absolutely sealed the deal.
Wow. And you'd never been to cinema before that, or this is the first time you remember?
That's the first movie I went to see at the cinema.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's late.
Yeah.
Are you an only child? I'm only asking that in because you just said you went with were there others?
I don't know why that's so funny. Are you an only child? It's like, it all makes sense.
Yeah,
alas, Princes and Goldstein, I am an only child. I am, yeah. Never wanted to be an only child. Very much wanted brothers and sisters.
You're a lovely man for an only child.
Thanks, man.
With all love in the world. Is there a reason you weren't ever at the cinema before, 10 or 11?
I think it's because my mum and dad were evil.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm getting at. It was the first time they let you out of the house? What happened there?
I don't know why. I mean, I've actually got no memory of seeing any kids' movie at the cinema before then. I was a big TV fan. I watched loads of that TV. But of that there TV. But movies wise, I just don't remember. And then a whole slew of movies came in, you know. Okay. You know, just, well, I made up for it. But okay. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you're
weird.
Such a no, I was gonna say such a lovely spiritual man. Maybe it's all these films that ruined me. Maybe the best thing was not seeing any films for 10 years. Oh my god.
I don't know.
Right, I'm retiring the podcast. Tell me this. What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared? Are you easily scared?
I'm very easily scared. I do not enjoy it at all. And when my friend, the lovely Simon Hedges, said to me, you've got to see this film. It's really beautiful. It's stunning. It's a masterpiece. I was like, great. Okay, I'll watch it. And I was away filming. I remember I was in a hotel room in Luton and I watched Midsommar.
Jesus.
On my own.
Oh, wow.
And I literally couldn't get through it, so I had to watch. And then I couldn't not see the rest of it. So the second night, I watched the second half of that film, again on my own in a hotel room in Luton. And it terrified me. I had the worst nightmares ever. That film, I mean, I think it's a complete and utter masterpiece. But equally, it is so psychologically disturbing and horrific. But the juxtaposition of the beauty of it is what absolutely destroyed me, and I never want to see it again.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, there's so much about that film, and one thing about it is it does the thing, the challenge, like the sort of horror filmmaker's challenge of, can you make a really scary film set in broad daylight?
Nailed it. Yes, you can.
Yeah. Yeah, he absolutely can, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very disturbing film.
So disturbing. I mean, all of it, just so disturbing. Even I remember there's this bit when she sort of says, Florence Pugh's character says, what time is it? And then he says, 9 p.m. And she says, it can't be 9 p.m. It's the sky's blue. And it says, the sky's always blue here and it's 9 p.m. And it was just those weird little, like, I don't like it.
Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it when she says she doesn't want to do acid and then she does acid. I'm like,
no.
Never do acid when you don't want to do acid.
No. Yeah, really.
Yeah, great film.
Mm.
Have you seen his new one, Beau Is Afraid?
Not yet, no.
You might. I wonder if you'll like it. It's not so scary. It's more of a comedy. It's very, very weird comedy.
Well, I welcome that. I love Joaquin Phoenix, but I did see his other one before, like The Hereditary, and that might be the other most scary film I've ever seen. I mean,
that's one of my scariest films.
Mm.
That ruined me for a week, that one.
Mm.
What's the film that made you cry the most? I imagine you're a crier. Are you?
I'm a huge crier. And so I was in Dublin about, I don't know, a year or so ago, and I was away filming, and I was walking through the streets of Dublin, and I came across this lovely-looking building. I thought, what's in there? Went in, and it was a cinema. And I thought, what's on? And it's The Summer of Soul. And and I was like, what time's that on? It was like 3:05. And I looked at my watch. It was 3:00. So I bought myself a coffee and a flapjack and went into this cinema.
Oh, God. Your death. Yeah. Your last death.
I died again, yeah. And and there was only one other person in this cinema. And I sat right in the center and I watched this movie. And there was just this one moment in it that it was actually David Ruffin singing My Girl. And just the way that he sang, I kind of imploded with tears. And then I did not stop crying for the entire film. It was tears of absolute joy that this amazing piece of history had been unearthed and put where it should be, but also the tragedy that it had been, you know, stuck in a basement for 40 years, and what would it have been like if this had been out there, especially when Woodstock was on at one of those weekends as well during the Harlem Culture Festival. And it just, everything came together for me, the festival element, the community, the oppression, but then the kind of the explosive talent, just destroyed me. That film destroyed me. But there were tears of joy.
It's a really, really wonderful film. Yeah. It's magic, that one. That's a magic film.
It's a magic film, isn't it?
It's really magic. Mm. Yeah, it really is. And it's fucking wild that it was, like, hidden.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Amazing. Good choice.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, well done. What's the film that you love? It's not critically acclaimed. People don't really like it, but you stand by it forever.
Over the Top.
Ha ha! Yes, bruv. I don't think that's ever been on here. Fucking Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling.
Come on.
In a truck.
Truck driving, arm wrestling Sylvester Stallone at the height of his 80s-ness.
Yes.
I love
Rachel.
Love that movie, bro. Love that movie. I really love that movie. I love the style. He wears like this baseball cap, this t-shirt, sort of braces. He's fresh off of. He did Cobra before that, so he's in peak form. But the thing is, I love Sylvester Stallone, and he's so vulnerable as well as being this, you know, action hero.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's a really good shout. Yes, he is very vulnerable.
He's like super vulnerable, isn't he? Like Rocky or even First Blood. And there's always this, you know, this big, he's just got this, I think he's got this big old heart. And he kind of destroyed me as a kid. I just loved him. I still do.
That's so interesting. I don't think it's ever been articulated to me. I think he is so vulnerable. I think, is it just how he talks? Is it the fact that there's something very, very soft about him? And you're right. And he's so hard, but he's also so vulnerable. Yeah, you sort of want to look after him as well. You're like, you all right, Punchy? you all right?
Did you just call him Punchy?
Yeah.
And sometimes he's like, Shooty.
Sometimes he's Shooty, sometimes he's Punchy.
Sometimes he's
always vulnerable.
Wrestly.
Sometimes he's Army. That's a really interesting. He's like, there's something lost about him, isn't there?
Yeah.
And he is tough and he could kill you, but you feel like he'd cry while he did it. And feel really bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. He was, you know, he was a big part of my childhood, Sylvester Stallone. I just loved all of his films. I really did, yeah. And that one in particular.
What about a film that you used to love, but you've watched recently and you've thought, I don't like this anymore? Probably because you've changed, not the film.
The Living Daylights.
Go on. Timothy Dalton's first James Bond, The Living Daylights.
The Living Daylights.
Cello on a snow. Cello on the snow, chucks it over a barrier, catches it.
Yeah, that's true. He does.
On a sled.
He does do that. And I remember loving that when he did that at the time. I thought, wow, he's so cool. Yeah. But now, I just think James Bond's a bit of a knob. I'm not really a fan. I'm just not a fan of him. Mm. And that movie in particular, but then when I start going through, I just think I've gone right off James Bond, if I'm honest with you.
Right. It's really funny. It's a really funny thing to say to him. Sorry, James Bond, I've actually gone right off you, son.
Right off.
I think your morals are appalling, actually, if you're asking.
You're a smug serial killer. Nothing more.
You're clearly a misogynist. You use women, then you kill them.
You wreck that car.
And we're supposed to think...
Do you know how much that cello's worth, son?
You callously chuck that cello. You're lucky you caught it, son. She's with a Philharmonic of some kind.
I mean, how many people you killed now, eh? You knob. Go on.
You're a knob. I don't think... Yeah, I hear you. That's fair. I don't know why you're taking it out in The Living Daylights. Is that because that was special to you, that one?
I remember being...
Your age,
well,
or whatever.
Yeah, it's true, because I was... The funny thing about thinking about these films is I realised that the 80s... was when I was most affected by movies, really, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I was, you know, from the age of 10, from that great opening into Amadeus, then I just went crazy on movies. And I remember being so excited about The Living Daylights coming out because there was this new Bond, you know. And I thought he was great. I thought he was great at the time. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think I could really sit through it now.
Okay, I'm sorry. What's the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had seeing the film will always make it special and meaningful to you, Mr. Jimmy Lance, sir.
Police Academy. It's Police Academy. So,
of course it's Police Academy. Tell me everything.
So my mum and dad divorced when I was very young, and so I would go and stay with my dad at weekends. And he would let me watch things I probably shouldn't have been watching. You know, I was 15 and 18 year olds and things. But we used to watch movies together. And I remember seeing Police Academy with my dad and thinking it was the funniest thing I had ever seen. And I just adored Steve Guttenberg as Mahoney.
Yeah.
I think he's just brilliant. I mean, he's so brilliant in Diner. I mean, so brilliant, Steve Guttenberg. But I sort of fell a bit in love with Mahoney. But the bit where, in particular, this is why this is a special film for me, and I still laugh thinking about it, is the bit when Commandant Lasard comes in to do a speech behind that lectern that Mahoney is hiding inside, along with a prostitute in there, and Commandant Lasard starts his speech, and you just hear his fly go zzz, and the look that George Gaines, who plays Lasard, gives is just the most brilliant bit of physical comedy. And then he goes into the speech, and it's the bit where he says, "And here we have some slides." And I didn't really understand what was going on because I was quite young, but I did know kind of what was going on. And it was back in the day with, you know, VHS recorders, video players. And so me and my dad just rewound the whole sequence. We just rewound the whole sequence. And I think we rewound it about 50 times. And the more we watched it together, the more we roared with laughter. Just everything about it. And then the button on the end of that scene when Lasard then walks off and he looks back and he's like, his whole world's changed. He looks back and then Mahoney pops his head out and he looks at him and he says, good speech.
That's so sweet. Did you? How old's your dad in that story?
He's old enough to know better. So my dad was 55 when I was born. I had an old dad. So, yeah. And so I was probably, what was Police Academy, was what, that must be about 84, 85, something like that. It was on video. Yeah. So what would I have been, 12 maybe? Something like that, 86.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very sweet story. I really like a 65-year-old man crying, laughing and rewinding as well.
And it was kind of the joys of video players as well, you know, because that was new. The whole, it all sort of, you know, came together.
What's the film that you most related to?
Okay, it's Dirty Harry.
The Zodiac Killer? Which one? Who are you related to? Dirty Harry?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I thought...
Say no more.
Should we just move on, yeah? But that was obvious.
Well, for the listener, I get it, but for the listener.
That was one of those movies I saw that I shouldn't have seen because I was a bit too young, and that, again, was on video. My stepmom works in a video store, so I used to watch all these films. And I don't know what it was. I just thought I was Clint Eastwood. I literally just thought I was Clint Eastwood. I mean, completely and utterly. To the point where I remember I'd seen... Is it Every Which Way But Loose or Every Which Way You Can? One of those. And I remember I was sitting at the table with my dad and my stepmom. And my dad said something that was a bit, I don't know, I can't remember what it was he said now. He said something, but it was like a little bit odd. And I just looked at my stepmom and went, something like, I said, he's not too tightly wrapped, right? And they were like, what? And I got really told off for being really cheeky. But I just thought it was sort of the norm because I thought I was Clint Eastwood. I really thought I was Clint Eastwood.
Oh, man. That hurts my heart. He's too tightly wrapped. How old were you when you were Clint Eastwood?
He's not too tightly wrapped was the line. I remember saying, "Oh, he's not too tightly wrapped." I don't know. I was very young, very young.
I wouldn't have told you off. I'd have been like, the fuck's happened here?
Yeah, I got told off.
What's...
Yeah, yeah. And they told me off.
What's going on? That's sad. What is the sexiest film? And is it Police Academy?
It's not, but I did lose my virginity watching a movie.
Tell us everything.
Well, I mean, that's it. One day after school... I went to this girl's house. I was 15. I was very, very ready for the occasion, certainly mentally.
Right.
And we were sitting on the couch and we put Dirty Dancing on.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is an excellent movie to have sex to. It was beautiful.
Well, yeah, it was quite something. And it was the point when just after they'd been carrying those watermelons, Jennifer Grey's carrying those watermelons, which somehow felt slightly relevant for me as well at the time. But and they went into this club and everyone was dancing in the sexiest way I'd ever seen in my young 15-year-old mind. I mean, they're basically sort of simulating sex and me and this girl, and we were in our school uniform, and not just the shared school uniform, and we got it on.
Wow.
And I lost my virginity. I mean, that was it. It was, for me, that was incredible.
And it went well?
It went very quickly.
But quickly, but well, not, you know, was this a successful, happy time?
Well, I can't speak for her, but I can say for me it was phenomenal.
Wow, that's so nice. So rare.
Once in a lifetime.
And also to get it right. Dirty Dancing, perfect, perfect choice.
That happened.
There's only maybe 5 minutes of that film you don't want to be having sex to. There's like a specific couple of scenes where you don't want to be mid-sex.
No, that was...
You know what I mean, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that was a
you,
sex.
You timed it right.
Yeah.
Okay. You did it long enough for the dancing in the club, which is about a minute.
Yeah, about a minute. Cool. Honestly, that was it. I haven't seen the rest of the movie. I need to see the end.
Oh, the end's great.
I didn't care.
There's a bit at the end of Dirty Dancing. I watched it recently.
Yeah.
Where Patrick Swayze comes back. He's left and he comes back and he interrupts the sort of final dinner dance thing. And he says, he does a speech like on stage. Some people don't care about people like me, but blah, blah, blah. And he does this speech.
Yeah.
And the last time I watched it, I was like, it's great, this speech. But the reality is most of the people in the room have no idea who this guy is or what... Like, as in, he's a member of staff that most people won't have seen or met.
Right.
And he sort of does this powerful speech. But I think the reality is most of that audience would have been like, who the fuck is this? What's happening?
Couldn't give a monkey's.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's great. And then he does a dance. And I think they're probably a one over by that point. They're like, well, I don't know what his speech was about, but I'm loving this dance.
The kid can move. He had everything, didn't he? Yeah. He had everything, Patrick Swayze.
Yeah. He was amazing.
Mm.
Hang on. Wait a second, you've gone back to this girl's house, you've watched Dirty Dance, you've had sex on the sofa. Is there anyone else in the house?
No.
Do you have to suddenly get dressed?
No.
You've got an empty house?
No, no.
You're clear?
No, an empty house. I went and got my...
Planned this in advance, that all agreed?
That we were going to...
All agreed in advance?
Yeah, that was definitely on the cards. We thought it might happen. Well, I hoped it would happen, and then it did happen.
Yeah.
And then it was all over really quickly. And I wanted to go again because it was so great. But that was it. We were done. That was it.
Right.
Yeah.
Last time you ever did with her?
That was the one and only time. Yeah.
One and done. When you do it, listen, that probably means you did it so well.
It's because it was so great. Like, never... No, but she had a boyfriend.
Yeah, it's never going to be better.
Yeah, she had a boyfriend.
She had a boyfriend.
Yeah. And he was like
my man.
He was like an older boy. You know, he was a boy that wasn't at school. So he was like... You know,
you had sex with a bigger boy's guy.
I did, yeah.
Jimmy Lund.
I know.
Trouble. You're trouble.
Trouble. Yeah.
I wonder if that bigger boy is listening now and going, I'll fucking kill Trent Crim. I knew he was that guy. There's a troubling boners, worrying wide ons, the subcategory. Troubling boners, worrying wide ons. A film you found arousing, you weren't sure that you should.
Brokeback Mountain.
Go on.
So, as far as I know, as far as I'm aware, I'm not a gay man.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I went to see Brokeback Mountain, and by the time those two cowboys got it on in that tent, I was there with them. I was 100% there with them. There was three of us in that tent, and I found it so sexy that I was like, geez, like, what? Let me think about, am I a cowboy? You know, and am I gay? I don't think I am.
Mm.
I don't think so. But geez, those guys, they were just really sexy. And, but it was something about, you know, it was a shock. It was genuinely a shock. Mm. I was really, that was at the cinema, and I, you know, yeah, it was a bit of a shocker for me, that one. I think it was, well, I know who, it was Heath. I was all about Heath.
Heath was your guy.
Heath was the guy. Something about
you
that.
You were team Heath.
I was team Heath. There was something about Ennis. I think his name's Ennis. And just, he was so painfully repressed that you just wanted to give him a big hug or, you know, a little more. Yeah.
He's... He's another vulnerable boy. You like the vulnerable tough guys.
I think this is what's coming out, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm, interesting. What's objectively the greatest film of all time? Objectively. Might not be your favourite, but it's the greatest.
This is such a tough question, and I've had to land on something. So I am going to say It's a Wonderful Life.
You can have it.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. It, you know, for everything... Everything it says, the way it's put together, Jimmy Stewart, the whole character, Clarence, is it Clarence Oddbody, the second angel, the second class angel?
Oh yeah, Clarence. Yeah,
I just love that character.
Yeah, it's up there with like Christmas Carol in terms of message. You know what I mean? There's sort of no better message in a film probably than that film.
I think so. I do think so. And the idea of, you know, when he's going to commit suicide, when he's going to jump off that bridge, the genius move of Clarence jumping in the water so that Jimmy Stewart just dives in because he knew he'd save him.
Mm.
I just love that. And, you know, it's such a great move. And I loved how open he was about being an angel afterwards. I just thought that was just brilliant. Hmm. Yeah, I do love that movie.
Okay, you can have it. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I think it's The Blues Brothers.
Nice.
That film, I thought was...
Fun.
Yeah, like that cast. It's the most incredible cast. You know, you've got James Brown, Aretha Franklin, John Lee Hooker. You've got Twiggy in that movie.
Yeah.
Who else is there? John Candy.
Harry Fisher.
Princess Leia. John Candy. You know, Belushi. And Cab Calloway. It just goes on. And it's sort of, I think, on paper, you sort of think, that film, that can't really work, can it? It's just kind of a series of gigs. But I think it's so funny. And there's one bit of business in it that I is one of my favourite. I think that's when I realised that, like, you can do something physically without words that is will end up often being my favourite moment. So there's a bit at the beginning of that film when Belushi gets in that cop car with Aykroyd, and he's upset that he's being picked up in a cop car, and he lights a cigarette with the car lighter, and he just lights a cigarette and he just lobs it out the window. And he does it in such a nonchalant way. And I thought, what a brilliant choice.
It's great, that film. It's so fun. It's really fun. Great. You can have it.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator, where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We don't like to be negative, you and me, so let's not dwell in this bit. But what's the worst film you've ever seen?
Right. Well, I'm going to say The Phantom Thread.
Wow. Whoa. Hold on. Why?
I went to see The Phantom Thread at the cinema, and I hated it. It was not...
Wow.
It was not the final Day-Lewis performance I wanted. It wasn't the character I wanted him to play. It wasn't the subject matter I wanted to see. I found it boring. I just soggy. I really, really hated that film. And I came out going, what on earth was that? Honest. And then, but then later I revisited it and realized that it is an absolute masterpiece. And it is genuinely in my top three films.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God you nearly lost me. And I was sitting here thinking, this might be one of the best episodes. I was about to burn it. I was about to delete the file.
You know, I have a funny thing with the genius that is Paul Thomas Anderson. I went to see Inherent Vice on 35mm at the Curzon Soho. And that, the first time I'd seen it, and that was not what I wanted. That was not the film I wanted it to be. And again, I was really, well, that was beforehand. So I was really upset about it. And I was like, that is like some, like the Big Lebowski on Mogadon or something, some dodgy, I just hated it. And then I got into it again through listening to the Johnny Greenwood soundtrack and thinking, God, actually though, the music's good, isn't it? And then I watched it again and realised that it's an absolute masterpiece and that it is hilarious. And I had no idea how completely genius Joaquin Phoenix is in that film and how funny and bizarre his choices are. They're amazing.
Really great, isn't it?
He's incredible, isn't
he? That's got great physical comedy in it.
The best.
Amazing physical comedy. The way he falls over is amazing in that film.
Absolutely. He does this one walk past in the back of the shop, like really slowly at one point for no reason when he's creeping about in the house. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It reminds me a little bit of, who's that amazing actor? James Mason in Lolita.
James Mason,
yeah. Should we both do the rest of this chat like James Mason?
James Mason.
And he does these really strange, I can't say, I sound like Prince Charles, but he does these really bizarre choices that are really funny and quirky and weird, a bit like Joaquin Phoenix in that film. So yeah, it was in Phantom Thread, but I just have to reiterate that I watch that film lots now. I love that film.
Yeah, so good. I also think what's interesting is you're saying this about Paul Thomas Anderson. I think it's maybe, if you're saying this wasn't the film I thought it was going to be, it's because his films are so original and so hard to pin down, and they're not, all of them are like not quite what you might think they are as a genre, or, you know, like they all go in odd directions. They're all very singular. And so I guess if you're like, oh, it's this kind of film, and then it isn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that throws you the first time. Like, yeah, none of them kind of follow a template of, is this sort of film?
Yeah, not at all. They're in their own realm, aren't they? And there's always something sort of unfathomable about them and mysterious and I think that irritates. I now know not to trust myself sometimes. Things that I have a real aversion to initially are often things that I end up absolutely adoring.
Yeah. And if it's affected you that strongly, something's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't the same, but I always think about when I first saw Moulin Rouge, I was very jet-lagged and I saw it in New York.
Right.
When it just come out, and I fucking hated it. I was like, this is so, it's exhausting. It's like so much, oh Jesus.
Yeah.
And then I kept having dreams about it. It was in my dreams for like 3 nights. And then I was like, I think I have to see Moulin Rouge again. And I fucking loved it. I was like, this is masterpiece, isn't it?
Really?
But it like haunted my dreams. And I'd left it thinking I hate it. Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. I think Baz Luhrmann's films can do that a little bit, can't they? Because when I went to see Elvis, I came out feeling like I'd been Elvised.
Yeah, you really have.
I felt like I was just full of burger and quaaludes. And I didn't feel great after that film. I really felt quite ill. Even though I was adoring Austin Butler's performance, it just Elvis me.
I'm James Mason and I've been Elvis.
I want to watch Police Academy. Again.
Please, my honey.
With Father.
Make it better. Rewind it,
Peter. Tell Paul Thomas and Anderson to wait outside.
I'll have to be seeing him twice before I like him. What is... You're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Yeah, such a hard one. Cinema Experience, Best in Show.
Great. Great. Why not?
Christopher Guest, when he's running through that list of nuts. Pine nut, macadamia nut, walnut, you know. Oh, my God. He's next level. I watched it again recently, and he is just next level funny. And then, but the thing is, and it happened to me again, I showed it to my wife recently. She hadn't seen it. I said, you've got to see this film. But when I first saw it, I saw it in the cinema in Brighton, and I was hysterical. And it happened to me again. By the time Fred Willard comes on, oh, my Lord, he is just joy in that film, isn't he?
Yeah, he is really in the zone in that film.
He is off the chain. I don't know. It's quite interesting that a character can come in so late in a movie and just sort of blow the lid off something that was already utterly brilliant and hilarious. And he do it and seemingly do it with such a light touch.
That's so true. He's fucking funny.
Too good. Have you ever met him?
No.
God, he's good.
Isn't he no longer with us?
Oh, please tell me Fred Willard is not.
I'm so sorry.
And if he is.
Maybe.
No, I'm going to say Fred Willard's definitely still alive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't want to be the person to tell you, so will it?
He's not, is he?
He's.
Is he?
I'm so sorry.
Are you serious?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't want to be. I won't tell you that.
Fred Willard?
Maybe, listen, it doesn't matter because in your head he lives in all our hearts.
He's with princes.
He's with the princes. He's with me now.
Okay, he is with me sorry. Now. Okay, I'm up there with Fred Willard and the princes. Yeah. Oh, man, okay. I didn't know that. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry. Shit. This is heavy,
shame,
man.
Right near the end. Jimmy Lance, you've been phenomenal. One of my favourite guests. This has been beautiful and I really appreciate it. However, when you were 101 years old, a year after you'd got a card from our new king, William, not Charles, because you'd killed him, you went to Glastonbury, you told all your friends, put money on me dying today. They all did. Then you deleted the text so that there was no insider trading, no fraud could be detected. You also said to everyone, make sure this message is not on your phone and we never discuss this again. Meet me at Glastonbury. They all meet you at Glastonbury and you go, did you do it? Did you do it? Did you do it? And they go, yeah. And you say, stop talking about it. We need no witnesses. And you go, okay. Anyway, Sly and Family Stone are on. So you watch your favourite bands. There's Nick Cave. Oh, the great Nick Cave's there. And you're having a lovely time. And you say, oh, great. And you all go... And to a stone circle, and you have a nice time together, and then you kiss everyone. Having made love, by the way, in the morning for 1 minute, and then made a full English book for two. And then you, without dancing on, because that's the only way you can be aroused. And then you go to the top of hill, you have a cup of tea and a flapjack, and then you cook some heroin up on a spoon, and you inject it. You inject it into your veins, and you OD, and you nod off. And you die. And I've been at the festival. You know, I'm like a fucking love glass. I'm always there. And I'm like, ooh, ooh. And I see your lovely wife. And I say, oh, where's Jimmy? And she goes, oh, he's just banging a load of smack up that hill. And I go, oh, cool. I'll go have a look. And I go up there and I'm like, oh, fuck, he's nodded off, this guy. Oh, no. You are a bloated mess, that flapjack. The carbs, and the combination of carbs and smack have just bloated you up. And I go, bloody hell. And I see your wife. I go, did you bring like a picnic hamper? She goes, yeah. So you got any knives in there? She goes, yeah. So come on in. We start chopping you up because there's too much of you, right? Chopping you up, chopping you up, chopping you up, chopping up. Pile you into the coffin I've got with me because you know what I'm like. And the coffin is absolutely rammed because of all the smack and carbs you were having. It is jam-packed in this coffin. It's fucking full. There's only enough room, really, for me to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the princes and Fred Willard in heaven when it's your movie night, Mr. Jimmy Lance?
Rocky 2.
He's vulnerable, he's hard, he's beautiful.
He's back.
That's Jimmy Lance. He's back. He's back again. Jimmy, tell people what they should listen to or look out for or watch in the coming months or years that you may be a part of?
I'm not sure yet. I've just landed a job, but I haven't done a deal on it yet. So I guess I can't talk about it, but it's going to be good.
Okay.
But look out. I'll be in something somewhere at some point, I'm sure. Well, hopefully.
Yeah, you won't miss him. His hair, listen, his hair's growing forward.
Yeah.
You won't miss him. At some point, he'll just be hair eyebrows.
Yeah, that's it.
I love you. Thank you for doing this. I hope you have a wonderful death. It was lovely seeing you. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, man. It's been great. You've made me realise how much I love movies as well, which is great.
You do love movies. You do. Thank you, man. See you soon.
Cheers, brother.
Good night. Goodbye.
Bye.
So that was episode 250. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with James. Remember to watch Ted Lasso and Shrinking over at Apple TV Plus. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. My neighbour Maureen loves it. It's very kind of you to do it. Thank you all for listening. I very much hope you're all well. Thank you so much to Jimmy for being so open, for giving me his time. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another smasher of a guest. Thank you all for listening. So that is it for now. Have a lovely week and please be excellent to each other. Your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.